Okay, good morning. Welcome, everyone. So this morning I'll talk about a little bit about building integrated delivery systems in the safety net and innovations in implementation of patient-centered medical home in 10 California counties. So I think everybody has heard the term patient-centered medical home, and I think that it also could mean lots of different things to lots of different people. It's a concept that is also already being expanded from patient-centered medical home to the health home, to neighborhood level, you know, sort of expanded and to lots of different areas, even though the primary concept of patient-centered medical home is actually not even solidified. But it's an idea that's been around for a while. It's not new, but it's really being adopted in lots of different places, particularly under the Accountable Care Act and the healthcare reform, as possibly a great solution to a lot of the problems that we are experiencing in the U.S. healthcare system, particularly the inefficiencies and poor delivery of care to individuals. So we're going to try to improve efficiencies in delivery of care as well as improve outcomes with this idea. It's a lot to take on under one idea, but you know, it does have promise, and as it's our fashion, you know, we sort of take it on, adopt it, and run with it, and we don't really know exactly what the outcomes are going to be, but idea sounds great. So we actually have had an opportunity to look at this in a little bit of detail, and I'll provide some more background about what we're doing in a minute. But the main point is that you can try to implement a patient-centered medical home as a way of delivery of care, but you really need a lot of support services to be able to implement it. If you imagine a community care provider, a physician in a private practice, to do all of the things that are required under a patient-centered medical home is going to be a challenge, obviously. It's even a challenge for more organized and larger group practices or community clinics. But it's so I want to talk about some of the services that are required to sort of support delivery of care under the patient-centered medical home. And also the other thing is when you're talking about patient-centered medical home in the private world, you know, maybe there are opportunities, better opportunities, and more resources. In the safety net system, there are a lot more challenges, so we'll talk about that a little bit too. So here are the principles of patient-centered medical home, where there should be a personal physician ideal is a personal physician that is the point of first contact, provides continuous and comprehensive services, is in charge of a team of providers that are working together to deliver comprehensive care for the whole patient, not just parts. So you look after all of the needs of the individual, and you also coordinate that care, and the care you're providing is integrated with other providers. So if the patient goes to the specialist, the primary care provider is in contact with the specialist, gets that information back, the patient comes back to the primary care setting, and their care is really well integrated and coordinated. And of course, that care should be according to all of the guidelines with evidence-based medicine, guideline concordant, and strong focus on delivery of high-quality care, taking into account patient safety and other considerations like that. And, of course, it has to provide access beyond the traditional, you call your physician, get an appointment, you go see the doctor whenever. You know, one of the principles is that you could get same-day access, so you can go in whenever you need to rather than you know, wait for whenever there's the next appointment a few days later. And you also have alternative modes of communicating with the provider beyond the traditional visit, beyond the telephone message. You know, those are the most common ways we interact with the providers. And of course, all of those activities need to be appropriately reimbursed. And the reimbursement should be aligned so that the incentives don't work in, you know, counteracting ways. They don't, you know, you pay fee for service, the incentives of paying a provider on a piecemeal basis like that are very different if there is some accountability for what happens to the patient. So all of those have to be incorporated into this ideal. That's why I said it's a lot to take on. If you really want to deliver care that way, there's a lot you must do to be able to do it. And so when you understand what is required in delivery of care under this model, you also want to think, so what is going to be needed to provide care like this? In different settings, whether it's a private physician, in, you know, a solo physician working in their own practice, as opposed to a clinic-based model or other systems. So then you have on the right-hand side the properties of an integrated delivery system. You think about integrated delivery system, think about Kaiser, for example. It's a perfect example of a fully integrated delivery system where the providers, the health insurance mechanism, and the physicians and the plan, all of that is working together, integrated towards the same goal. And then if you were an integrated delivery system, what do you do? Oh, my goodness, it took too long. So you can see, if you compare what I put on both sides of the slide, how well they integrate. So I need to go much faster. We are the evaluator of a Medicaid 1115 waiver in California called Coverage Initiative, healthcare coverage initiative, where the state government with the federal government put together this program to deliver care to individuals. And one of the requirements was that it is a patient's, you have to assign everybody to a medical home. But it was very vague what exactly needed to happen there for somebody to be medical home. I think it was really a usual source of care more than a medical home. And so there were 10 counties participating, and they were charged with putting together integrated system. Well, they were not charged with putting together integrated system, but they were charged to put in a safety net-based network together to deliver care to these individuals. It was not an insurance mechanism. It was just care delivery. So it was not transportable. You couldn't go anywhere you want. It was restricted to where you can go. We conducted interviews with the individuals that were delivering, organizing and delivering these services at each of the 10 counties. So it could have been the director of the program with some of their staff that were informed about how they are doing things. And so here's a little bit more information. I'm not going to get into the details of it because we don't have time. But so let's get into what we were looking at, what the counties are actually doing to support delivery of care according to the principles that I discussed a minute ago. And we have actually, I do have information in the back if you're interested, a couple of flyers. There's a health affairs article on this, plus a really detailed report that you can see all of the different questions we asked of the counties, their responses individually by county, and as much detail as you would ever want to know. We asked about the access to what are the activities that the counties are doing to ensure to support delivery of care. And these included whether they actually look to see that they have sufficient primary care providers, whether they had trained their primary care providers on teamwork. Medical home, to deliver care according to medical home principles is not going to be something that's intuitive to everybody. There's a lot of training required, and a lot of people are not used to delivering care on a team-based. What does that mean? I have to delegate things. As a provider, I'm not going to be doing all of it myself. I'm going to only deal with the most, you know, difficult problems, and there's a lot of basic stuff that other trained professionals in the team can take care of, not the provider. So you can see the implication of that in terms of improving, you know, the delivery of care as well as improving access. And then training the PCPs. So each one of these, you can see how many of the counties said, yes, we do that. If you get really into the weeds, you start seeing gaps and holes. We're not going to get into that right now because there will be a long discussion. And then partnering with the community-based organization to facilitate available social services. That's the last one on this slide. Looking at specialty care, which is one of the biggest challenges under the safety net, is how do you expand delivery of specialty care? And there's a lot of things that you could do around it. Number one, you need to make sure that you have enough providers. So we asked the counties how they assessed. Did they assess? And how do they assess if they have sufficient specialty? And you can see that some of these, like, you know, really looking at detail, do I have enough providers, were more rare types of activities. Most people just look to see how long are the waiting times. You know, if there's really long waiting time, that's an indication that we don't have sufficient specialty. You can draw your own conclusions whether that's the best way to do this, but... This is what's happening. And then we looked into other activities that are really important. How do you manage your referrals to specialists? Because how do you avoid having 6 to 8 months, you know, long? And how do you avoid having all these inappropriate referrals that don't really need to go? Because the primary care doctors with a little bit of training should be able to do some of those activities without referring to specialists. And again, you know, we're finding relatively good level. They really quickly figured out that they have to deal with the referral issue, develop guidelines for the referrals, and manage this specialty access because there were so many resource constraints. Other types of programs that support delivery of care, so disease management, care management, providing health promotional materials, all of those things are really important. You need those kind of services to support the primary care providers. And we saw, again, some good examples of some of these activities. And what was really not done a lot of was administrating health risk assessment, which you could see why you need to do that, because you need to identify patients that need most care. And this one was not done as much, so it's sort of hopefully the next steps. Language interpretation services, that was quite common. These clinics and the counties obviously are used to having a lot of populations that need those type of services, so they're doing well there. Here are some other examples of disease registries, all of the kind of services that are very important in delivery of care appropriately to these high-need populations with, and also deal with the issues of quality and sort of addressing those particular aspects of delivery of care under medical home, having guidelines available, decision support tools for the providers. Referral notes back and forth between the primary care and the specialist. So some of those, you know, they may not have been uniform across the county. What we found out is that a lot of times they are performing those activities or they do have systems in place, they have IT systems in place, but it's really just for the county providers, like internal county providers, but not the contracted community clinics that they had to incorporate into their network. So it's just not going to work as well if you only do it within the county system, but you're leaving out all of the other providers that are supposed to. So you're not really providing as much as you must. So in terms of the overall understanding of what we found with these counties is that they actually can provide. This was probably the most interesting lesson out of this, is that you have safety net systems that are not used to doing any of this stuff. This is patients come in, you sort of deal, it's episodic care, you do what you must do to sort of do the minimum to take care of these patients, but now you have to move towards an actual system approach because you have providers that are part of your system. I need to stop, but I'm just going to do one more because, so talking about the implications of these findings is that these are the kind of things that actually could happen and are possible within the safety net system. And that's something that I just want to say that to leave everybody with that impression that we can actually change the way care is delivered to move towards a more integrated approach, move away from this episodic care, and move towards some of the principles of the patient-centered medical home or integrated delivery system. Thank you.